Good morning. You're listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And good morning and welcome. I'm Harry Miller.
And good morning. I'm Kim Hance.
And I'm one of the attorneys with the Herzog Law Firm.
And I'm not.
Kim is not. Well, what are you, Kim? Kim is our care manager. She's a certified care manager.
Actually, I like the way you put it a little bit better, because every time Dave introduces me, he gets this little smirk on his face, because the professional term once upon a time was geriatric care manager. So he thinks it's funny that he can call me geriatric.
Well, anyway, let me finish the introduction. We are both with the Herzog Law Firm. We are estate and elder law attorneys. We are, our main office is at over in Corporate Woods at 7 South Woods Boulevard in Albany. We also have offices in Saratoga Springs at 47 West Harrison Street, just three blocks off of Broadway. And we are also have had an office in Kingston, New York for the last 20 years. And we are at 1155 Flatbush Avenue.
Right,
just inside the Ulster County Airport, right up, easy to find, right off 32. And we're here, as you know, if you're a regular listener, each Saturday morning from 8 to 9 o'clock to talk to you, answer your questions primarily, and bring you some updated information that might be helpful or interesting to you in the area of estates, trusts, asset protection planning, Medicare, Medicaid, IRAs, 401ks, beneficiary designation, taxes, the whole gamut of things related to elder law and estate planning. And Kim, of course, is a care manager in our firm. So she's not a lawyer, but she brings a whole new dimension to the law firm that we haven't had in the past. And I was actually... But let me give you our phone number here so you can call us with a question, because please call in. That's primarily what we're here for. So the number here at Magic 590 is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And Ben will pick up the phone here. He's with us here in the studio each Saturday morning as well. The toll-free number, if you're outside our local area, is 1-800 WROW 590. So I never see any. You're hardly ever in the office. Kim primarily operates out of our Saratoga office, but she's rarely there. I see her about once every 2 weeks. We have a departmental meeting every Friday morning, and I see her there, but hardly ever. You're just out and about with our clients and their families, aren't you?
Absolutely.
So what are you doing all day?
So, yeah, that's a good question, right? One of my primary roles is to visit families that are coming to us with a need because they're dealing with either an aging spouse or parents. And I go out and visit and do an assessment and try to help decide what the best plan moving forward will be. Mm-hmm. So this month we just did our aging in place seminars. And most of the time when people hear that term, they, you know, a lot of things come to mind. But our goal really is to educate people on being able to age in place, whether it's at home, whether maybe they've already downsized and are living in a senior community of some sort, mm-hmm. But they want to stay there. So a lot of what I do is actually go out and make sure that the plan makes sense, because a lot of times they hear about these different things that can be done, community Medicaid, that sort of thing. But we also, I think, are very responsible in making sure that it actually makes sense for that person, because we live in upstate New York. The majority of it is very rural. We have a workforce shortage currently, both institutionally and homebound wise.
In the care business. I mean, home care workers and workers in assisted living facilities and even nursing homes, there is a tremendous shortage of capable people to provide those services for older people.
Right.
Right. And so,
So, you know, I really want to make sure that care can actually be provided. I mean, we affectionately call it, refer to it as care on your couch.
Care on your couch.
Right.
So it's a new kind of couch potato.
Right.
All right.
All right. But we want to make sure that if somebody has significant physical disability, that they're not going to be left without any help, and then at a high risk of taking a fall. If somebody has cognitive impairment, Alzheimer's, dementia, anything like that, that they're not going to be left alone for any period of time.
Right, it's unsafe.
Right.
And at some point, I mean, you know, I'm sure you're all aware of this. Everybody out there listening to us probably knows somebody who's living alone in their home or apartment and probably shouldn't be, you know, just because they either don't have care, they don't know how to get care,
right.
They can't afford care. And one of the things we can provide to our clients and their families is we can look at the availability. A lot of this care is available through the Medicaid system.
Right.
And people don't know about it. I mean, I guess we're in the business of nursing home avoidance.
Sure.
Because while we do a tremendous amount of preparation and protection to protect the family's life savings, homes, and assets, should they have to go into a nursing home, the primary goal is not to get them into a nursing home.
Right.
It's to keep them at home in place for as long as it's humanly possible to do that. I was, Kim and I did a seminar together. We did a series of client seminars this past week, and Kim participated in those as well, because as she said, it was the aging in place, which is primarily what her function in the office is. And I was particularly impressed by the kind of creativity that you have and bring to our firm in structuring care. You were talking, I don't know, can you talk about this? But you were talking about a person who essentially really needed 24-hour care, but it wasn't possible to do that. Yet in the context, because you know about all these different programs, you were effectively able to get that by cobbling together a couple of different programs. Can
right.
you talk about that for a minute or two?
Sure. When I'm going in, I'm not only looking at it from just the Medicaid hat, right? I'm also looking at, is this person a veteran? So can we access, there are so many services available through the VA that people don't know about. I mean, there are a lot of these hidden sort of services. And it's interesting because I'm actually in conversation with one of the VA counselors in Albany because I uncovered in my research a program that is supposed to be running out of Albany and Syracuse. It's called the Veteran Care, Veteran Home Directed Care Services Program. Uh-huh. So I reached out to our Saratoga County VA director and was like, hey, I just was reading about this program. Can you tell me a little bit about it? And he's like, I've never heard of it. You know, so this is our county director. Uh-huh. And so it forces me to dig a little deeper. And I think that's one of the things. Sometimes I'm kind of like a dog with a bone because I don't like to take no for an answer. And I really want to advocate for people, and I really want to find ways to make things work. So we have the VA that has, a lot of people are becoming more familiar with the program called Aid in Attendance that provides a pension each month for, you know, a veteran who was war service,
that's
active
right.
war duty. But outside of that, so we're losing a lot of our World War II vets now, right? And we're moving into the Korean and Vietnam War era.
Yeah, most of the World War II people are no longer with us. There's a handful, but I got to tell you, the other day I had a client in my office who was 86 years old, and I said, he laughed. I said, well, you're too young to have been in World War II.
Right.
I said, because my father was in World War II, you know? And my father, were he alive, would be 103. So, you know, he was like 20 years younger than my dad. So he would have been in the Korean War. And he said, yep, that's what I was. Yep.
Right. You know, and so there are some, for a lot of our Vietnam vets, this is something a lot of people don't know, and you don't even have to need care in order to access this. There's something that's called a compensation. There's two different things.
There's a pension, VA pension.
And then there's a compensation. So the compensation is basically, particularly for Vietnam veterans, certain diagnoses, things like diabetes, heart disease, neuropathy, those different things actually will qualify you if you served in Vietnam and had a propensity to be exposed to Agent Orange. Now, you didn't have to be on combat. So my dad is a prime example. My dad is 75, right? Served in Vietnam, was in the Air Force, but was an airplane mechanic. So he didn't really...
He wasn't on the front lines. Yeah,
right. He was on front lines. But the planes were coming back, and they had Agent Orange on them, so he was working on them. So he is currently considered 60%
disabled.
Disabled because of all of these health issues he has. He gets a monthly pension of almost $1,800 every month. The great thing about that is, you know, while it's sad that he has all these health issues, the good thing is if he passes before my mother, that pension will, or that compensation will continue on to my
mother.
Right.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But he needed to access it before he passed away. So the other one that we're so familiar with, the aid in attendance, is for home care specific, for people who need home care or assisted living.
Assisted living, yeah.
that you can access whether the veteran is alive or deceased. So this Vietnam one you have to access while the veteran
Veteran has died.
Right.
Okay. And the veteran could be the female spouse as well. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Mostly it's men, but not always.
Right.
And then the aid in attendance, because I know I've done that, I think the stipend for the veteran is a little over $2,000 a month.
Yep.
And for the widow, I think it's up to almost $1,100 this year.
Right, right.
And see, the thing about it is, when they calculate your medical expenses, the cost of home health care and the payments you're paying for assisted living are considered medical-related expenses.
Right.
So they tally all that up, and I think if all of those expenses, including your drugs and supplies and all those other things, exceed your income, then you can access this pension benefit.
Right, right.
And it's a wonderful... I mean, the hard part about it is, you know, you're dealing with the VA, which is probably the most... broken down agency in the federal government. Yeah. It's also the largest agency, I think, in the federal government. But the paperwork, they're pretty far behind. They're almost in the dinosaur age from a computer standpoint.
Right.
And it takes a tremendously long time for these programs to be processed and approved. For instance, there is an expedited procedure for aid in attendance if the applicant is over 90 years old, okay? Because obviously there's a higher probability that that person may die before they access the benefit.
Right.
Well, that means they may get it done in a year instead of a year and a half, right? It doesn't mean it's going to be processed in 45 days like a Medicaid application. But that should not discourage you, because what happens when your benefit is actually approved, it is it's retroactive to the date you were eligible.
Right.
So it's not like you have to wait a year. You might have to wait a year for the money, but when you are approved, you'll get 12 months worth of monthly benefits.
Right. And that's, you know, it's funny because it took me a year to convince my dad to go apply for this, you know, because
I have the same problem. My father-in-law, he wouldn't apply for the veterans exemption on his town taxes.
Right.
Because he thought it was like welfare.
Right.
I said, welfare? You know, you were in the trenches in France in World War II in the army infantry,
right,
and you got captured, you've earned this, you know, for heaven's sakes.
Right.
That's why these programs are here, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, we're getting better about getting them out and getting the knowledge about the programs out, and every county, the nice thing now, too, is every county has a VA special, you know, a VA office, and that's what I always say to people. That's where we go to access these benefits. You should never pay somebody to do an application for you. You know, the county offices are very good at helping if you can't find the DD-214, the discharge paperwork.
Right.
They're very good at trying to track that down. Or, you know, a lot of these veterans, their DD-214s were lost in a fire, you know,
You know what? I did that when when we were applying for that for my mother-in-law. She had some discharge paper, but it wasn't a DD-214. Well, there was some place I wrote to, I think in St. Louis, where you could get a service record. And his were among those that were destroyed in some fire, but they had proof that he had served.
Right.
And so that was sufficient for the VA to validate the dates in which he served and to determine he was eligible for the benefits. So you can do these things. Also, you know, the New York State, the Division of Military and Naval Affairs, which is out, it's out there off of Old Niskayuna Road. It's up in Latham.
Okay.
there are some folks out there. They have attorneys there. In fact, one of them I know pretty well because he was a law student until a few years ago. He graduated and is working out there. And they are very helpful with people in terms of helping them with access to get the forms and the information they need to complete these applications to file with the VA. You don't file it with them, but they can give you a lot of assistance. So if anybody's interested in learning about those things, you can always call our office during the week and just ask for one of us, and we can talk to you further about those things. All right? 476-5900 is our number. Love a phone call in here.
I know.
518-476-5900. What else is going on? Well, just speaking of the VA, there have been some significant changes that were implemented in October to the Aid and Attendance Program.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you remember when we talk about Medicaid for nursing home payments, if you've transferred property within 5 years of applying, that's going to have an impact on your eligibility for Medicaid.
Right.
Now, the Veterans Program never had a transfer penalty, okay? But now it does. They implemented new rules in October that impose a transfer penalty in a look-back period of 3 years now for VA aid and attendance benefits. But what they did was they upped the amount of assets you can have to be eligible. They used to use about $85,000. Well, since October, the asset limit has been pushed up to about $123,000.
Oh, that's good.
Okay. So if the veteran only has a house and $123,000, they're eligible. Okay. well, they got to look at their medical expenses. It's not the only criteria.
Right. Then there's the income piece of it.
Then
right?
There's the income piece of
right.
it.
Right.
But that's the asset piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, we're going to take a break and talk to Harry in Albany. My namesake. Hey, good morning, Harry.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Good. I was just listening to your program. I got it on the air right now.
Okay.
I am a Vietnam veteran. I served in Vietnam in the 60s, and I served alongside the USS Enterprise.
Oh, yeah.
And I was on a destroyer out of Newport, Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just listening. I wonder if I was eligible. I didn't get really in contact with Agent Orange, but... Mm-hmm. We operated with the Enterprise, and I've just heard about this Blue Navy.
Hmm.
All these, some of these benefits are coming back to people who did serve in Vietnam, but weren't actually on land.
That's you were in the Navy?
Yes, I was.
Yeah. Now, my understanding is if you are on active duty for more than 90 days during a wartime, which would include the Vietnam War, and you can go online and get the dates. If you were in the thick of the Vietnam War, you don't have to have been in combat. You could have been stationed in North Carolina, all right? But you would be eligible for these benefits at some point in time. You may not need them now, but in the future, as you get older, you could apply for them down the road if you developed. And in fact, for the for aid and attendance benefits, it does not even require that it be a service-connected disability, right?
Right.
The program, the other program Kim was talking about, or your dad, that's a service-connected disability, right?
So the
malady that you have, whatever it happens to be, if it's a heart condition or neuropathy or whatever it happens to be, is related to a service-connected injury. But you can get aid and attendance, you know, just when you get old and decrepit, even though it's not related to your service during the Navy and the Vietnam War.
Okay, because I was listening to Kim talk. I think that's your name. Mm-hmm. I'm a year older than your dad. I'm 76 now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I don't use the VA per se because I'm very fortunate that I have good medical coverage through
right.
my wife.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I know, God forbid, if anything happens, I could always turn to the VA. But
right.
this is very interesting information coming out. That it, like, you guys are right about getting that information out. You never hear about it.
Nobody talks about this on TV. I mean, they have all these, you know, all these people on TV, they do these healthcare things, but they don't, they never talk about, in fact, maybe they don't know about them either. So, yeah, we're just trying to get the word out to people because there are an awful lot of programs available. And
right.
there's no central place you can really go to learn about this stuff.
Well, and Harry, right. one of the things that I would encourage you to do, what county do you live in? You live in Albany.
Albany.
So I would just encourage you to just stop by your Albany County VA department. They're super nice. They're super helpful. They're going to let you know if there's anything out there that you could be eligible for, even though you may not need it now. Because the thing that I hate to see is somebody have an event and then we have to like work backwards to either try. So one of the other things that I had talked about in our program this week is also if you're just connected and you just see a VA primary care provider once a year, there are all sorts of like home equipment that you can be eligible for, ramps, chair lifts, stair lifts, all different. They'll come in and put bars and widen doorways and they'll do all sorts of modifications to the home at no charge. You just need to be connected by a primary care so you don't have to get your meds through the VA. You just need to see a primary care physician. And a lot of people like yourself have never really accessed that service. And it does take a couple of months to get into mm-hmm. the VA. So what I say to people is like, hey, you're eligible. It's an entitlement that you're, you know. So
you've earned these benefits.
Right. So just do it. And then that way, if there ever is at a time that you need to access something, you're in the system. And it's much easier to start with somebody who's already in the system than somebody who we're starting from scratch mm-hmm. and need to try to expedite things. Right.
They have a file on you.
Right.
VA, you know, because I let people who are, you know, who really need to use the VA for medical purposes.
I totally hear what you're saying, but you served your time, and this is
yes.
a benefit that you, I mean, and thank
yes.
you for that, because, you know, there are so many things that we all get because
yeah.
of what you did for us, but, you know, this is one of those things that I say to people, you don't have to really utilize the services, just get into the system so that if there ever is a time that you need to utilize the services, it's there.
Harry, about your father-in-law?
Yes.
I did get a nice VA benefit for taxes in the city of Albany.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, initial 10% on the...
Right, yeah. Well, I finally convinced him to do that because he was out in the town of Colony, and yeah.
Yeah.
It's very not, you know... you guys have, you know, you guys put your time in, and
absolutely.
You know, it's not well for you. It's being recognized. Your service is being recognized
yeah.
and rewarded.
It's about
and,
time, correct?
Yeah, I'll say.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'll say. Definitely.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
The information.
Right.
I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Great. Thanks for listening. Take care. David down in Kingston's on the line. Hey, David.
Good morning, Kim. Good morning, Harry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Harry, I have a question concerning asset protection.
Hmm?
And the question is, I currently have a savings account, and on that account, a sibling is listed as a joint owner.
Okay.
My question is, or at least I understand that if this individual were to get into credit problems or money problems, it's true that the creditors would be able to come up after that account, correct?
Well, probably, yeah. They could file a lien against it, yes. Yeah.
Would they be eligible to access the entire account, or would they be limited to a certain percent, since I'm also the owner?
That's a good question. I don't think there's a completely 100% answer to it. I think what would happen if the creditor served the bank with a lien notice or whatever, you know, copy of the judgment, what would happen is the bank would simply freeze the account until the matter was resolved and nobody could draw any money out of it. How much, it might depend to some extent as to whose money it is, all right? If each of you put in 50% of the money, then they might only be able to glom half of it. But if it's all your siblings' money and you're just on there as a matter of convenience, maybe they could glom all of it, you know. Okay. So joint accounts are a mess when we get into creditor issues. Yes.
Okay. Next question then,
which,
Harry.
I mean, which is it? Is it why do you have a joint account with your sibling?
I put a sibling on it to have access to it in case something happens to me and she needs to access it to pay bills.
Okay, there might be better ways of doing that if you're concerned about her having creditor problems. You could, for instance, keep the account just in your name and give her a power of attorney limited to accessing that account. Okay?
All right.
If you wanted it to go to her, if you predecease her, you could put it in beneficiary form so that when you die, she could go to the bank with your death certificate and get the account, but she couldn't withdraw any money from it, nor could her creditors put a lien on it while you were alive. Okay, so there's some other ways to solve that problem rather than putting the account potentially at risk.
Okay, so on the question of the power of attorney,
right?
If I name her as the POA,
right?
Again, if the creditors found that out, would they be able to use that to access?
Absolutely not, because she is your agent. She can only use the money for your benefit, not for hers.
Okay, so
it's not her money. She would simply be acting as your agent, so she could sign checks to pay your bills. If she signed a check to pay one of her bills out of your account, that would be a violation of her obligations as your agent.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for the information.
You
Have
bet.
A great day.
Keep listening. Thanks. These are common problems that people run into every day.
Well, so for example, the situation that I was talking to you about yesterday afternoon, mm-hmm. right? So I'm dealing with a married couple, both 96.
She brought at our Christmas lunch. You know, Kim never. She's really.
Stop.
You know, even when we're having fun, she's thinking about work. You know, I'm sorry. I don't. You know, but the fact of the matter is, we're having our Christmas lunch yesterday at the Barn Cider. We're all having a great time, and Kim says, do you have a minute? I got this thing on a power of attorney. It's out in my car. Do you mind if I bring it? I said, bring it in. So we sat there having a glass of wine and looking over this power of attorney.
Well, because these things come up, right? And it's Friday afternoon, and I'm feeling the pressure of, you know, so I've got this couple that I'm dealing with, and husband and wife, and the husband is very physically disabled. They're both 96, very physically disabled, but has his wherewithal.
Right.
His wife, however, very physically capable, but has very advanced dementia. I mean, she's very social and very, but can't make any kind of decisions or anything. So, and you know, when we were working and talking with the bank so we tracked down, he definitely has power of attorney for her. Lots of other issues. Their son took advantage of them, embezzled money. I think we have to take a break.
Well, yes? We're going to continue this, but we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour right after this break.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Kim Hance.
I'm one of the attorneys with the firm, the Herzog Law Firm. And
I'm not one of the attorneys.
Kim is not one of the attorneys. She is our care manager, and she works with our client families who are in need of accessing care services through private home care, through home care provided through the Medicaid system, and I think we talked about this early at the top of the hour. A lot of families are in denial about how sick mom and dad is or their spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And the inclination, obviously, is to keep someone home as long as possible. and look at the home care situation. I think the dynamic that Kim brings to these families is she's an independent evaluator who can go out to a family's home. She can sit and talk to the family and the person who needs the services, you know, for an hour or two. She can look around the house and see if it's physically outfitted for a person who is either handicapped, aged, or you know, has mobility issues or memory issues. And then she can sit down and realistically talk to the family and say, look, yeah, okay, I think your dad could get by with 8 hours a day of home care. Or she might come to the conclusion that this person needs 24-hour care. It's not going to be possible to provide it in this physical environment of the home because there's no downstairs bathroom. There's no downstairs bedroom, or it's not been retrofitted. And she spends an awful lot of time doing things like that.
Right, right. Well, I mean, our goal is to try to have people be able to age in place or at home or wherever it is that they want to. And you know, to your point, when we were doing the seminars this week, I said one of the things that I feel are one of my strong suits is being creative and kind of an out-of-the-box thinker.
Right.
You know? And one of the things that I talked about utilizing in addition to home care is like day programs, because it provides for very steady, reliable care for during the day, especially for families who may be taking care of mom and dad. They work, and what happens if a caregiver doesn't show up? You know, we have an issue. And then to your point, we have a house where the only bathroom is upstairs. Maybe mom and dad can't navigate the stairs. So what do we do in order for them to be able to get a shower, get washed up, and those kinds of things? So by utilizing day programs, both from a social aspect and medical aspect, they can provide a lot of support for folks. They can get occupational therapy, physical therapy, med management. So we have somebody that is a diabetic. They can manage the insulin and the finger.
These day programs aren't just babysitting, right?
No,
I mean, they have activities and stuff, right? And they have,
give them
lunch or snacks or something, you know.
Yep.
But then somebody who's got like the client who had diabetes, and this person, had a prosthesis from an amputation.
Correct.
As a result of the diabetes, and they needed help putting on their prosthesis. They couldn't do it by themselves.
Right.
And they also had severe neuropathy, so they had limited movement of their hands and feet. But this day program provide medical intervention to assist this person with their diabetic needs.
Diabetic needs and just the physical needs, you know, personal care. His, you know, shower at home, he needs to be able to get in and out using a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And he couldn't get in. So he, you know, it's a big fall risk for somebody to try to transfer from a wheelchair through a doorway into another type of device in order to get into the shower. So by going to a day program a couple days a week, he doesn't want to go every day, which is fine.
But you could go 2 or 3 days a week.
Doesn't need a shower every day. So
right.
by going a couple days a week, he's able to get those services. To your point, you know, he gets 2 finger sticks between, you know, the morning and afternoon, so they're able to do that. They're able to do his sliding scale insulin. They're able to give him the correct lunch, because left to his own vices, he's not eating a diabetic
diet. He's not eating a candy bar.
So while he's there, they're really monitoring that he's making good choices. You know, so, and he's getting a social piece of it. A lot of times I say to folks, when you sit at home all day, every day, by yourself, or even with one other person, things get a little stale. Right,
your brain goes to sleep.
Right.
Your muscles atrophy, you know, from lack of movement.
And there's not much on TV these days that's very stimulating.
Only so many episodes of the Game Channel that you really want to watch. You want to watch reruns of Gene Rayburn back in the 1970s in his polyester suit?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
So by going to utilizing a day program, they provide transportation that is covered. They, do all sorts of engaging sorts of activities, whether it's with a group of people, whether it's, you know, by yourself. They do field trips. So when the weather's nice, they'll go out and do different things. I know one of them just did a trip to Washington Park to see the lights in the park.
Uh-huh.
You know, so they're
activities.
Constantly,
yes. You know, it keeps their brains functioning and moving. Their eyes, they have visual stimulation.
Right.
They have, you know, oral stimulation. They can talk to people.
Right.
People perk up.
Right. The most common thing that families will say to me is, my mother will never do that.
Well, that's absolutely a problem. Not. That's a problem.
But then I say, okay, I hear you and I totally respect it, but let us try it. Let's just try it and see.
Uh-huh.
And I will tell you, probably 7 times out of 10, mom ends up loving it because they're doted on. They have. It's just this unknown, right? It's just this unknown. And a lot of times we get people, especially with folks that may have some kind of cognitive issues, you know, you're going to go there to, these old people need your help. You know, it's all in how we word it. there's a very common tool that we use when we take care of folks that have any kind of memory impairment. It's called therapeutic fibbing.
Therapeutic fibbing. Yeah, I know. I had a friend of one time. Her mother was in an assisted living facility. She was strong as an ox. Physically, she was 100%. But she had the faintest idea where she was, who her family was, and everything. And I guess this is, you know, the fibbing you're talking about, because basically she thought she was working there.
Mm-hmm.
She thought she was an employee.
Yeah.
So she would do the dishes. She would help clean up the plates after lunch. And she didn't realize she was actually a resident at the facility. She thought she just had a room there, and then she'd get up in the morning and go work.
Right.
And she loved it.
Well, it gave her purpose, right? And I think that's what happens so often with folks as they age, is they lose the purpose. It was funny.
There's no reason to get up in the morning.
Right.
Right. They got nothing to do all day long, you know.
Right. So being able to, it's a whole, not new, but it's within the last decade, something that we've really realized. I mean, before we used to use reality therapy with folks that have memory loss. And very quickly you learn, telling somebody that their spouse has passed away over and over again, it just brings them back to that, oh my God, you know, like they just grieve and depressed. And so,
right.
You know, by kind of like, oh no, he'll be back later. Like the kids.
He'll be back. And eventually,
right.
My mother was like that. My mother, at the end of her last couple of years, she was alive. She had severe memory issues, and much of the time she knew who I was, but sometimes she didn't.
Right.
And she called me Charles, and I said, Charles. He said, who's Charles? I said, Charles Berkey. You're my cousin, Charles. I said, Mother, I'm flattered. I said, you know, you never could stand any of your relatives. The only one he actually liked was Charles Berkey. And I said, so I'm really flattered that you think
there was
I'm
a family.
At least I'm the only one you ever liked.
Right. It's funny because when I was very little, probably 9 or 10, my grandmother was probably moderate stage Alzheimer's at that point, and she always used to call me.
They didn't know what it was then. They just called it, senility?
Right.
They didn't really know what it was.
But she used to call me Trev, which was her oldest daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at pictures, I mean, even as an adult, I look so much like my aunt. She's now deceased. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But my grandmother, I think I must have really looked like her as a child. So at my age, at 9 or 10, I looked like her daughter when her daughter was younger.
Was
so that's
10,
what she just referred to me as. And it was funny because I would get all upset because she doesn't know who I am. And, but we then just eventually just kind of went along with it, because every time we corrected her, she would get very agitated and very frustrated.
It creates enormous anxiety for people with memory issues. My mother had lived in her house for 45 years, and she kept saying, I can't wait till I get well enough to go home.
Right.
And initially, I was confused. And I say, Mother, this is your home. You've lived here for 45 years. No, she said, I'm going home. She said, I'm just staying with some friends right now.
Right.
And finally, I figured out that home was my grandmother's house. It was a house down the street where my mother grew up as a little girl.
Right.
And her... At that point, her mind had reverted to a childhood, and her home was my grandmother's house where she grew up, lived in until she got married.
Right. I mean, it's funny because with very typical Alzheimer's, we kind of call it reversed aging, because the most recent memories get erased, and they just kind of continue to go back in time.
Right.
And it's really hard for people, and this is the conversation I have with kids, too, when they say, I promised Mom that I would keep her home.
Right.
I'm like, well, she doesn't even recognize this as
home. She didn't even know she's home.
Right.
Right.
You know, so in a lot of circumstances, you know, like this couple I was kind of talking about before we went to the break, we're going to tell her, so they're going to go for a short-term respite until we can get a home care plan in place. And I said, we're not going to have the conversation with her about going to the nursing home. We're going to tell her she's going to resort, because quite honestly, the nursing home that they're going to go to is actually quite nice.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we'll find things for her to do. And so we will completely kind of avoid the nursing home conversation. her husband felt very like that he needed to be honest with her and needed to have a, you know, I share everything with her. And I said, I understand what you're saying. I said, but she doesn't have the capacity to really understand.
Can't process the information anymore.
Right. So yeah. We need to make it so that she can understand, accept, right. And that mm-hmm. and know that she's with you and that's all that's important. And that you guys are going to go stay in this place together and that's all we really have
right.
to worry about.
You know, TMI, too much information is not a good thing that's with true. People with memory issues.
Yeah.
Hey, let's get a couple of calls in. It's only about 29. 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590 if you are outside our local calling area. So let's get back to that power of attorney we were talking about before the news break.
Right.
We were looking at this power of attorney. It was the mother who gave her, the wife gave the husband power of attorney, right?
Correct.
And the wife is mentally competent but physically impaired, right?
No, the other way.
The other way around.
Physically.
The wife.
Right.
Okay. The husband.
Physically uncapable, you know, physically
but mentally,
disabled, but
mentally
sharp.
Sharp.
Yep. And
deteriorated to the point where he can't really act as her power of attorney.
He can't physically do anything, right? So we were trying to get the power of attorney to the bank so that he can access his wife's bank accounts because she has a separate account. Mm-hmm. And in her dementia, she has basically hidden the checkbooks, hidden the credit cards. You know, nobody can find the stuff. So we needed to be able to get access to things at the bank. And the bank said that he needed to physically show up at the bank
power of attorney.
With the power of attorney. And so as I'm explaining to the bank, this is not possible. He's bed bound. He, you know, to get him out of the bed, it takes two people and a Hoyer lift, and there's no way we're going to get him to the bank that way. Mm-hmm. So that was my question to
you.
It's
a problem because they might, you know, these days, you see with all the stuff with Homeland Security and the Patriot Act and all those things, when people are accessing accounts, banks are requiring individuals to come in and identify themselves to the bank.
Right.
And so it's, you know, it can be a real serious problem. Yep. We're going to switch to Ann out in Wineskill, though, first, then we'll come back to this. Hey, Ann, good morning.
Good morning. This is a change of subject.
That's okay.
This question came up when I was talking to my daughter. I have an irrevocable trust.
Mm-hmm.
My house is in the trust. Now, if I were to sell the house,
yep,
it would convert to money.
Sure.
Now, down the line, if I needed to take out money, say to buy a car or whatever,
yes,
how do I go about doing that?
Well, your trust, even though it's irrevocable, your trust can actually be partially revoked so that you can take money back out of it at some point in time if you choose to do that. The New York statute, there's a law in New York that basically permits all living trusts, even if they're not revocable, to be altered, amended, or revoked by the person who set up the trust. That's you.
Okay.
So in order to do that, you need the consent of the trustee and all the beneficiaries of the trust, okay, which is probably your child. Who's a trustee? One of your children?
One of my children.
Yeah, and the other, all of them are probably beneficiaries. So
right. You
and your children can sign a piece of paper that we would prepare. It just says that you set up a trust. You want to take $50,000 out of the trust pursuant to the, I won't give you the statute, but it's 7-1.9 of the Estates, Powers, and Trust Law. And all of you are going to consent because you're the only people who have a beneficial interest in the trust. And then your daughter or son, who's the trustee, can go to the bank, withdraw the money, and put it back into your checking account.
Okay.
You can do whatever you want with it, okay?
Okay,
it doesn't make sense to people who aren't lawyers that an irrevocable trust could be revoked. It's an oxymoron that yeah. makes no sense logically. But if you think about it, it actually does make sense. What the legislature has said is, if the person who set up this trust decides for some reason they don't want it anymore, or they want to change it, and all the people who have a legal beneficial interest in it agree to that, why shouldn't they be able to do it? It makes a lot of sense when you really think about it.
Okay. Well, okay? Thank you so much.
Anytime. Have a good weekend.
It's funny when we talk about things like this, that, you know, so many people complain about living in New York. It's high tax, whatever.
Yeah,
but
sure is.
New York is actually one of, true, but we do get benefits for that, right? So, you know, one of the programs that we talk about, the community home, you know, Medicaid home care program, is a very robust program in New York State.
I think it's probably one of the most comprehensive home care programs in the country.
Right. And then, you know, to the point of the irrevocable trust, like in Massachusetts, an irrevocable trust is an irrevocable trust, right? Mm-hmm. You can't break into it. So
that's correct. Not all states allow irrevocable trust to be revoked.
Right.
Massachusetts, I think, because Jane Marie, Jane Marie's one of the attorneys of the firm. She is admitted in both New York and Massachusetts, and you can't do it over there.
Right.
You'd have to get court approval.
Right. And the same thing for putting money into an irrevocable trust. It's not protected the same way it is here in New York. So,
well, I know, for instance, I think she told me in Massachusetts, your IRAs and 401ks are in fact countable resources that have to be spent on your care.
Right.
Not here.
Right. And that's one of the big things that I think is hard for people to get their head around, because so often when we do these seminars, you know, one of the things that they say to us is, well, I have too much money, either because I have a $2 million IRA.
That's the assumption.
Right. Or my income is well over the limit. And what we always say, and, you know, this is also one of the things that, you know, Dave will say as well, is like, we could get Bill Gates qualified for home, you know, Medicaid.
Yes.
It would take a lot of planning. Yes. But, you know, you can, because the...
Tough for home care, but we certainly could if you use it in a nursing home.
Right.
But he will never go to a nursing home.
Well, true.
See, New York is what's called an income spend-down state.
Right.
And so, if your income exceeds the applicable Medicaid income limits, you can spend down the excess and still get Medicaid benefits. So, in the home care situation, your excess income can be deposited each month and paid to a nonprofit charitable foundation.
Right.
There are a couple of dozen of them who operate in New York. And then that foundation puts your money in a trust account. And out of that, you tell them which of your bills you want to pay. Pay my rent. Pay my cell phone bill. Pay my cable TV bill. Pay my electric bill. Pay my insurance premium. Pay my real estate taxes.
I want to go see my kids next month.
I want to go see my kids.
You know,
I charged $800 on my Bank of America credit card. Pay my credit card bill. So you can funnel your income in such a way that it's still available to pay your bills.
Right.
Okay. And so for Medicaid purposes, you have the applicable income to qualify for the home care benefit, but you haven't sacrificed all of your incomes. I mean, for instance, the income limit for a single person or a widow is like $850 a month.
Yeah.
Well, you know, nobody could live in a house or an apartment on $850 a month. You wouldn't have enough money to pay the expenses.
Correct.
So, but that doesn't mean you can't access the benefits. And that's where we come in, because we can help you access these benefits. And they're there. They're there for the taking. As Kim said earlier, the tough part is not necessarily qualifying for the benefits financially, but once you're qualified, piecing the program together and actually getting the aids in place, because there is a tremendous labor shortage in the home care market.
Well, and what people don't understand too is the process that you have to go through. I mean, you know, Donna, your wife, is a prime example in putting the program together.
It's a challenge. I mean, we have gone through this. I have some personal experience here.
Right.
And thank God for Kim, because without her, I would have thrown up my hands months ago and said the heck with it.
Well, and what unfortunately happens is a lot of people end up doing that. And it's heartbreaking, right? Because then we see people end up in placement or in situations where they don't want to be.
Correct.
Because, you know, the process was, it is just very frustrating and very labor intensive. And if you don't know all the steps, you can get lost in the process very easily. And I mean, that's definitely one of the things that we try to do too for our clients as we walk them through this process, is it's just not about getting them financially eligible and getting that approval. It's like, okay, now the real work starts.
Now we're approved, now what?
That's what I always tell families, is like, you think that was hard? let's move forward.
Now, this is the scary part coming up.
It's not impossible, right? And that's what I just keep saying, is like, we have, you know, you have to stick to your guns, but eventually we'll get there. We will get
you
there.
Will get, and you know what, down the road, and I can say this, it's worth it. It really is worth it. Getting these things in place, because not only not only does my mother-in-law have the kind of assistance that she needs, and she does not need a lot of assistance. And we're talking about 10, 12, 15 hours a week. This is not 24 or even 8-hour day care. But it's assistance that she needs and that can now be provided, you know. I mean, if my wife goes away in the winter for a month, she's not going to be around, you know.
Well,
and her brother lives in Atlanta, and there's nobody else to do this stuff.
Right, and that's what I was going to say to your point. It's sometimes it's not even about the person who's getting the care. It's about the caregiver. It's about the primary caregiver who's having. I mean, think about your wife who has to run back and forth 15 times a week to deposit a check, pay something, you know, make sure that she's taking her meds, you know, just by having somebody there a few times a week, that stuff is consistently getting done. So it gives Donna a break. She doesn't have to run over there four times a day.
She's getting the care, and she has the peace of mind that that it's being taken care of competently.
Right. And that's what I often say, too, is for the, for the caregivers who are providing care, especially kids who are taking care of parents, who are working, who still may have young children, teenagers that they're still trying to run around. I mean, you can really make yourself crazy trying to make sure everybody's taken care of. And, you know, making a lot of us make that promise, I'll never put you in a nursing home. while that is certainly
never
not,
say never. I mean,
never
you know,
say
because,
never.
You know, it's becomes, you know, as time goes on. And ladies and gentlemen, this problem is going to get dramatically magnified in the next decade or two to come because and don't get depressed about it, but, you know, the over 65 population between now and about 2040...
50
is going to double from about 45 million to 90 million people, you know, in about... In not too many years, about 25% of the population of the United States is going to be over the age of 65.
Right.
And very few of us have taken the time to talk to a competent professional about these issues and develop some type of a game plan. And you know, there's plan A, plan B, and plan C because we can't predict the outcome of our health, our physical health, our mental health, our financial health. And so that's why we're here to guide you through this process. And you can't wait until it's, you know, until your mother is so bad that you got to get a nursing home in the next 10 days or the next month.
Right.
You can't wait till the bitter end. And so, you know.
It's funny because I've been having these conversations with my husband because our house, we have a 2-bedroom, 1-bath little farmhouse.
Yeah.
And guess where everything is? Upstairs.
Upstairs.
And our house is not situated so that we could put a chairlift in our house. So I say to him, look, we really need to seriously consider, and we're not moving because this is just our forever house. And so I said, we need to really talk about what it's going to look like for us in the next 15 or 20 years. And I don't want to be, if we're going to add something on, I want to do it now where I can enjoy it. I don't want to add a bedroom when I'm 85. You know, I want to do it now so that if we have guests, we have room for somebody. And, you know, we live with a teenager. So, good gosh, trying to share a bathroom with a teenager right now.
I've done that.
And I said,
I've done that. It doesn't work.
It's terrible. So I'm like, gosh, if I could have a second bathroom for the next 4 years, this would be really great until she graduates, you know?
Yeah. No, you have to plan. I mean, we did that 10 years ago. We had a big old house, a gorgeous house, and a golf course. It was beautiful. But everything, same thing, everything's upstairs. So we sold it, and we bought a small, well, not as a smaller house, but a differently configured house.
Yeah.
Has a downstairs master, a downstairs full bath, and then upstairs there's 3 bedrooms and a couple of baths, you know, which we never use.
Right.
But, you know, it's all on one, you know, so we're all on one floor, there's no steps. And the same thing, my place in North Carolina, it's all one, no steps.
Right.
And,
And you have to think about it. I mean, it's hard to be proud. You know, it's easy to be proud and say, oh, I'm never going to need that stuff. But even now, like yesterday morning walking out, there was just a slight little bit of ice on the stairs as I was leaving. And my daughter said to me, she's like, you're walking like a granny. And I'm like, well, because I don't bounce back like I used to, you know. So if I take a fall right now, like it slows everything down trying to really figure out how to be, you know, careful and conscientious.
And you have to, if you're older, I mean, you're young, but, you know, when people get into their mid to late 80s, a fall is a seriously traumatic event.
Yeah.
So many people wind up in the hospital because of a fall. And a fall at 87 or 92 is a very serious event.
Absolutely.
And it necessitates hospitalization. And it may not even been the fall, may simply be the consequence of something. It could be the person actually had a mild stroke that caused the fall.
Right.
Or a mild, you know, TI or something like that.
Right.
That winds up in the hospital. It could be quite severe. And at that point, all sorts of things can happen if you haven't, you know, put a plan together.
Right. And sometimes the plan is just talking to people. It's not that hard. It's just talking to people and kind of letting them know what your wishes are. And
you have to get started.
Right.
It's a process that takes months or maybe even a year to all the stuff we've been talking about the last hour is... This is a tremendous amount of information to digest. There's the Medicaid program. There's all kinds of veterans programs. There's all kinds of private programs and things. And the fact of the matter is almost no one knows how to put these plans together so that they make sense. And your family is different from every other family.
Every fact pattern is different.
So there's no cookie-cutter solution to these problems.
Right. I think we have time for maybe one more caller. If there's somebody out there that's just waiting, 518-476-5900.
I can't believe it's 10 days till Christmas, right?
Oh.
But you're sending Christmas in Italy, right? Are you leaving next week?
Wait,
Kim is spending Christmas in Rome and Florence.
That's great. Get out of here and go enjoy it.
Well, is your husband though? He's working, isn't he?
Hopefully he's not working over the 2 weeks, but you know, he travels a lot, so we just took advantage. Uh-huh. And so I was saying, like last year we decided that we don't need stuff, you know, like who needs more stuff? And so we just decided that we were going to start doing experiences for our presents and stuff. So we cashed in some frequent flyer miles and
absolutely,
out, you know.
So, you're going to love it. I'm going to give you some great restaurants in Florence. I was just there last May and also in Venice.
I can't wait.
All right, folks, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.